I'd like to tell you a couple stories today. Don't worry, they're in here. Let's turn over to the book of Numbers. Numbers 12. There's an interesting story here that's almost a little bit of an insert. To my knowledge, we don't necessarily see a whole lot of consequence other than the little bit of this story here. But there's many lessons to be learned. We're going to look at one today. Start in Numbers 12 and verse 1. We'll read the story. Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married. For he had married an Ethiopian woman. And this is speculated that this is referring to Zipporah, his wife, whom he probably married before he even came back to Egypt to lead Israel out. But this is the Ethiopian woman, or some translations will say a Cushite woman. And so they complained against him. So they said in verse 2, "Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also?" And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very humble, more than all men who are on the face of the earth. And suddenly the Lord said to Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, "Come out, you three, to the tabernacle of meeting." So the three came out. Then the Lord came down in the pillar of cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle. He called Aaron and Miriam, and they both went forward, no doubt with a little bit of fear at what was going to happen. Then he said, "Hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak to him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. I speak with him face to face, even plainly, and not in dark sayings. And he sees the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" And he goes on and he punishes Miriam by giving her leprosy. And we see the story unfold that way. And after 7 days, she's healed of it. But it's interesting. We're mainly looking at the fact here today that Aaron and Miriam spoke against Moses. Why did they do that? Even God asks them there in verse 8. He says, "Why were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" Let's look at some key factors here in the story. In verse 1, they spoke against him because of this woman that he'd married, right? But obviously, as we move on, we see that that wasn't the real reason they were speaking against him. But they found an issue. They found something that apparently must have been a big enough issue for them to pull it out and say, "Look, didn't Moses do this? Wasn't this a problem?" If it wasn't a touchy issue with some people, which it might have been, it probably was, because otherwise why would they pull it out and say, "Hey, look at this problem Moses has. Look at this thing that we have against him." Right? There was something that they could pull out against Moses, some dirt they could dig up, something they could say against Moses, and call it to the people's attention and say, look at this. He's married to this Ethiopian woman. And that's a problem, right? Moses has got an issue. So they saw this flaw, or a perceived flaw, and they called it to the people's attention. And then they move into the real motive, right? Which is not necessarily, "Oh, we should help Moses with his marriage or something." They move away from the marriage issue. They say, "Look, Moses has a flaw." That's the big thing they're doing. Moses has a flaw. And then they move into verse 2 and they say, "Has the Lord not spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also?" Which was true. When you look back through the story, you look in Exodus 15 after Israel had crossed through the sea, Exodus 15:20, Miriam is called a prophetess. And God spoke through her. And so she is one of those that God had used. God had used her as a mouthpiece. God had used Aaron as a mouthpiece the whole time that they were in Egypt, that Israel was in Egypt. When Moses was coming to the Pharaoh, Aaron was the mouthpiece, if you remember, not Moses. God spoke through Aaron. God spoke to Moses and Aaron. There are several places where it says that God spoke to Moses and Aaron and obviously used Aaron as the mouthpiece. And Aaron was the high priest at that point. So they weren't wrong in saying this. They weren't wrong in saying, hasn't God spoken through us? He had. But again, Moses' wife clearly wasn't their primary issue. It had to do with authority. It had to do with power. And so, like we see in modern politics even, they found some dirt, they dug it up, and then they brought their real case. They said, this man is not worth your time for these reasons, and here we are. But in verse 7, we see God presenting a different side of the story. God says, not so with my servant Moses. And he calls him my servant. This isn't just Moses, a man. This is my servant. God comes and says, he's mine. He serves me. And I talk with him face to face. And elsewhere we even see him called a friend. Right? So Moses is not just this man that you can come and talk against. This is my servant. So when you speak against him, you speak against me. That's the implication. And in verse 8, he asks the question, why were you not afraid? And we can speculate as to why they weren't afraid. I would speculate, and this is speculation, but I would speculate that maybe it's because they were family. When you're family, you maybe feel a little bit more at ease to pick at somebody's flaws. You know them. You know this person, right? You know their weaknesses, their issues, their tendencies. And then something happens and you say, yeah, that doesn't surprise me because I know this and this and this and this and this about them. And perhaps it's because they were family. You know the expression that familiarity breeds contempt. Maybe they knew things about Moses that not everybody else knew. They knew him growing up. They knew that he was, you know, just this kid with these issues, these problems, and now here he is, and everybody thinks so highly of him, and come on, it's Moses, it's our brother, right? And so maybe they had a little bit of contempt for him, having such regard with God and with the people, and here they're saying he's just a regular guy, right? But perhaps it's because when you're familiar with someone, it's okay to call out those flaws, even when we like the person in general. When we're comfortable with somebody, it's a little bit easier for us to, you know, think, hey, there's an issue here, there's an issue there. Yeah, I see that person has some problems. And the more familiar we become with each other, maybe the more lax we are, let's just put it that way, with how we are in dealing with each other's flaws and issues. Our expectations of each other go up. We say, yeah, you have this, you know, I know this person has this issue, and they should really be able to rise above that. You know, I know that they've had it for years, right? They should be able to rise above that. Whatever it is, there's some of those things about familiarity and closeness that make it a little bit easier for us to maybe pick at each other. And perhaps that's what it was with Miriam and Aaron, that they just felt a little bit at ease. After all, God had spoken through them. They had authority too, right? Aaron's a high priest. Miriam's a sister of both of these guys. We've got, you know, I've got a leg to stand on in bringing this thing against Moses. But their big problem was just that when they looked at Moses, they saw a man. And we see this throughout Israel's history. When they looked at their leaders, they saw a man and not God. And they saw issues and they saw problems, and they didn't recognize that God was working with someone and treat them that way. Not everybody, though. Let's turn over to 1 Samuel 26. We'll look at our second story. First Samuel 26. And verse 1. Now the Ziphites came to Saul at Gibeah, saying, is David not hiding in the hill? So here we have David on the run, and we have Saul trying to find him, trying to kill him, trying to wipe this guy out because he's got issues. Then Saul arose in verse 2 and went down to the wilderness of Ziph, having 3,000 chosen men of Israel with him to seek David in the wilderness. And Saul encamped in the hill which is opposite Jeshimon by the road. But David stayed in the wilderness, and he saw that Saul came after him into the wilderness. David therefore sent out spies and understood that Saul had indeed come. So David arose and came to the place where Saul had encamped. And David saw the place where Saul lay, and Abner the son of Ner, the commander of his army. Now Saul lay within the camp, with the people encamped all around him. So David comes and sees them sleeping, and looks and says to the people, David says to Ahimelech the Hittite and to Abishai the son of Zeruiah, the brother of Joab, saying, "Who will go down with me to Saul in the camp?" And Abishai said, "I will go down with you." So he's going on a pretty daring exploit, if you will. It's not just David sending some guys into Saul's camp. David himself is going to go with one other guy, and they're going to go down into Saul's camp of 3,000 men where Saul is sleeping. So David and Abishai came to the people by night, and there Saul lay sleeping within the camp, and his spear stuck in the ground by his head, and Abner and the people lay all around him. Then Abishai said to David, "God has delivered your enemy into your hand this day. Now therefore, please, let me strike at him once with the spear right to the earth, and I will not have to strike him a second time." But David said to Abishai, "Do not destroy him, for who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless?" David said furthermore, "As the Lord lives, the Lord shall strike him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall go out to battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. But please, take now the spear and the jug of water that are by his head, and let us go." So here's David, and let's consider a couple factors about this story, right? David knows Saul very well. He's been Saul's armor bearer in the past. Saul, it says earlier, it says Saul loved him greatly. Once, speaking of David, Saul at one point thought very fondly of David. David knows that Saul has issues. He knows that Saul has been troubled by an evil spirit. He's had Saul attack him. He's seen Saul kill entire cities of priests and their families. He's seen Saul do some pretty horrible things, right? He knows Saul is a horrible, horrible leader for these people. He knows that really Saul is probably not a very good man. David also knew, as Abishai here tells him, he said, let's kill him. God has delivered your enemy into your hand. David knows he's next in line to be king. He's been anointed to be king. He hasn't forgotten that. And so here's his opportunity. This is a second opportunity. This isn't just the first one. So maybe he could even be standing there thinking, maybe God is giving me this opportunity again because I passed it up the first time around when I had a chance to kill Saul. But all of these things, right, all of these opportunities and all of this that could possibly be coming into his head is not what drives his actions. He had all the justification for avenging himself, and he didn't. And he simply says, "Who can put forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless?" He recognized here that it wasn't about Saul. It wasn't about Saul and the person Saul was and the issues that Saul had. It was about God. God had appointed Saul, and God knew that he had a time for Saul. David knew that God had a time for Saul. And so he said, this is not our territory. Right? In spite of all the flaws and all the issues, right, God is working with this man, and we need to respect that. And that's where he left it. So he looked at Saul and saw God, not just a man. So we see a little bit of contrast in our two stories, right? We see Miriam and Aaron finding the flaws, focusing on the flaws, and we see David overlooking all the flaws and focusing on the calling and on the appointment that was given. We see Miriam and Aaron allowing their personal issues with Moses and maybe their familiarity with Moses to break down their image and treat him with a little bit of disrespect. And we see David maintaining great respect for a man maybe unworthy of it in spite of everything he knows about this man. In spite of everything that Saul was. We see Miriam and Aaron asserting themselves over their, you know, over this Moses guy, asserting their authority, asserting that they really are maybe up at that level. And we see David, who would be at that level and knew it, humbling himself before this man Saul. The one, on the one side, Miriam and Aaron, they saw a man, they saw a person with flaws, right? Moses wasn't perfect. And on the other side, David saw God. He saw God's appointment, and he overlooked the flaws, and he overlooked the issues. Those are our two stories, right? So our big question today then is, what kind of person are you? What kind of person am I in my relationships with people that God has set apart? Let's turn over to Romans 1. Because I worded that in a way that you're going to have to ask, well, what do you mean, people that God has set apart? Romans 1. Paul is writing to a church he has never met. He's writing to people he's never seen. He's never been there. Right? He didn't found this church. He didn't start this church. Some people say that this letter to the Romans is really Paul's fullest explanation of Christianity, of what it is. Right? So he tries to capture Christianity. This is Christianity 101. And there's a lot of depth to the book of Romans. But it's really his explanation to a people he's never met about, here's what I think you really need to understand and what you really need to know. And here up front, in the beginnings of Romans 1, he wants to make sure they're aware of where they stand with him, of where they stand with God, of who they are, of what they are. And so right up front, in the very beginning, he tells them here in verse 7, he says, "To all who are in Rome, beloved of God, called to be saints." He just tells them, you are called to be saints. And this carried some weight there because, you know, what does Paul think of us? What does the Jerusalem church think of us? Are they questioning our validity as a church? Are they questioning who we are, our faith, our authenticity? And Paul's writing to him and saying, you know, I know who you are. I know your faith. You people here in Rome, you're beloved of God. You're called to be saints. The word there for saints is an interesting word. It's hagios. It's the same exact word that is also translated holy. So Holy Spirit, when you see that translated, hagios, it's the same word here for saints. And it's the same word used throughout. For saints, for holy, for holiness, it's hagios. He says, you are called to be holy. You're called to be saints. You're called to be consecrated or set apart. That's what the word means. It means consecrated. It means sacred, right? You're set apart. Something that is sacred is something set apart. Something God has said, this is special. This is mine, right? So he is looking at the people in Rome. And up front, he's telling them and essentially telling all of us, this is your calling. You are called to be saints. Now, the world's view of saints is a little bit different. You know, you have to be voted into sainthood in some religions. And people say, oh, I'm no saint. But religious people will say, I'm no saint. But you are. That's what we're called to be. We're called to be holy. We're called to be saints. We are sitting in this room, standing, if you're standing, we're saints, right? We're set apart. We're something that God has said, you are special to me, right? So again, our question then is, what kind of person, which kind of person are you in your relationships with people that God has set apart? If God has set somebody apart as his, people around you, right? How are you in your relationships with those people? Are you sort of the Miriam and Aaron type? You know, well, or I know God's called this guy, but, you know, I know him. I know this person, right? Or are we the David type where we say, I know this person and I know their flaws and it's not my place to bring this person down? If you turn over to John 17, just to sort of reiterate this point, John 17:17, Jesus is praying to the Father. This is his final recorded prayer. He says, sanctify them by your truth. Sanctify, we understand, that's set apart, right? Jesus is praying that God would set us apart. Set us apart by your truth. That word sanctify is the verb form of the word saint, right? Saint is, it means holy. It means set apart. It means consecrated. Sanctify means make holy, means make consecrated, make them saints. Right? Jesus is praying about us as a people that God would make us holy, that God would set us apart. So just reiterating the point, we are set apart. God has set us apart. We are a holy people. So how do we deal with each other? We've got the two contrasting points of view, right? We have Miriam and Aaron on the one hand. They are maximizing flaws, right? In that one example, they're maximizing the flaws. They're overlooking the calling. They're maximizing the flaws. David is overlooking flaws. David is overlooking Saul's issues, his history, his background, overlooking the issues with the man Saul, and saying, he's got something else going. Right? So he's not focused on the flaws. Miriam and Aaron sort of allow that familiarity with Moses to give them a little room to speak against him and say, well, you know, I know this guy, and I don't know. You know, I'm okay saying this about him because I know him. Right? I'm okay being this way towards him because I know him. Yeah, God's called him and he's special and right, and I know that. But he's my brother. And, you know, I've got some room with Moses to be able to say whatever I want to say against Moses. David, on the other hand, he has that familiarity with Saul, has had that familiarity with Saul in the past. Saul loved him. But he doesn't take the opportunity to speak against Saul. He doesn't say, well, I know this guy, and really, look, he's done this, and he's done this, and he's done this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this. You know, and there's a pretty big list against Saul. He didn't use those things to say, so let's all move into the camp and kill Saul. Right? He treats him with the honor that is due him as God's anointed. And you'll see, David doesn't say, this man Saul. When he's dealing with the man Saul, he deals with him wisely. But here, when somebody says, let's kill him, he says, this is God's anointed. We have to treat him that way. We see Miriam and Aaron asserting themselves over this guy, Moses. Say, well, you know, and we can do that with each other. Well, I know so-and-so, and I know their issues, and really, I know I'm better than that, you know. And so, therefore, I should be able to do this or say this. Or, you know, you should look at me instead of that guy. That's Miriam and Aaron. David, on the other hand, he gave esteem to Saul. He gave him preference. He esteemed him over himself. Miriam and Aaron, they overlooked the calling. They overlooked God's calling for Moses. And David maximized it. And that's really what it came down to. On the one hand, when we're dealing with each other, we can look at each other and we can say, well, issue. You've probably noticed that there are people here in this room that have some issues. You might know some people with some issues. If you know perfect people, you're a very rare individual. Most of us have issues. But we can overlook the issues. We can focus on the issues. We can focus on issues that everybody else has. Or we can give preference. We can overlook the flaws and recognize this person was called by God. God is working with this person. Even with these issues that this person has, God is working with this person and has a plan for this person. And, you know, I need to deal with that person in that way. Right? We should be dealing with one another as though God is working with each of us, because He is. If He's called us, if His Spirit is living in us, He is dealing with us, has a plan for us, a wonderful plan for us, a big plan for us. And we need to remember that. Mr. Dave Johnson, during the ABC class on the Epistles of Paul, when he's talking about that section in Romans 1, he says this. He says, as we associate with one another, we will notice flaws. We realize also that we have flaws individually. Sometimes it's easier for us to see the flaws instead of the people, instead of recognizing that God has called us to be a part of His body. He makes an interesting statement. He says, none of us will surprise God. He's not surprised to find out about some problem that we have. We may be surprised as God opens our eyes to see the issues that we have. But God is not surprised. He will not say, wow, if I had known that about you, I never would have called you. He knows exactly what we are, and He's committed to working with us in spite of the flaws. That's encouraging personally to recognize with your own flaws, hey, God knows about these issues in me. As you discover that you have problems and issues, you can be encouraged knowing that God already knew that. God knew that about you and called you anyway. And that's encouraging. It's personally encouraging. But we should then be able to take that personal encouragement and deal with others in the same way, to recognize, hey, when God called that person or this person or whoever it is that has some, you know, irritating habit or has done something that you're just, you know, that person has an issue. I just don't know about that. When we see that, we recognize, hey, God called this person in spite of that. God called me in spite of some of the things that I am. And He's still working with us. He says, continuing quoting Mr. Johnson, he says, it's important for us when dealing with one another not to look at the person and the flaws, especially if those flaws are irritating, that we don't look and get upset about it, but to remember that God is dealing with that person, that God is working with each of us. God knew when He called us exactly what we are. He knows our potential weaknesses, where we may stumble down the road. And He gave us His Spirit in spite of those. And if the Spirit of God is living in a person, we need to respect that. And we need to respect that tremendously. Let's turn over to Philippians 2 in closing. Philippians 2 and verse 3 simply says this. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. And that really sums it up. That sums up the whole point of what we're getting at here. That we can be on the one side, we can say, you know, I know this person and their issues, and here am I, and look at me, and elevate self. Or just relegate somebody else to the gutter because I know their issues and I don't have them. We can do that. Or, like David did, we can esteem others as better than self. David looked at a man and said, God has appointed him for a reason and it's not my place to take it yet. So let God handle it. Let God deal with it. And thereby, David is essentially saying, this man is more important than me. We're not touching this. So we need to also be that way with one another, be able to esteem each other as better than self and deal with each other that way. We are saints. We have flaws. We're saints with flaws. It's perhaps an oversimplification, but remember that we're saints. Remember that each of us are saints and forget the flaws.